Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. Coming up in a few moments, celebrating Saint Pius the X and of sacred music with our popular Latin lover. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. I'd like to begin today by bringing you echoes of the pontificate of the first Pope of the 20th century, whose feast day the Church remembers on Saturday 21st of August. He's Saint Pope Pius X, who you'll be hearing about in a moment in a very personal manner, as remembered by some of those who knew him and by others whose family belonged to the papal court of the time, and who share stories regarding him passed down by their very own parents. Born Giuseppe Sarto, he was elected as successor of Peter on the 4th of August 1903 and died on the 20th of August 1914. But do stay tuned as we begin our story with three American sisters sitting in a horse-drawn carriage as they make their way to the heart of the Vatican to enjoy an audience with this Pope and future saint.
You could see these beautiful carriages going through the Vatican. Everybody knew they were going to the Vatican. All the horses clattering on the, and it was really quite impressive going. But there were very...
The familiar sound of the horses clattering on the cobblestones of the narrow alleys that used to lead up to St. Peter's. The three McMurrah sisters are breathless with excitement as they recall their first visit to the newly elected Pope in the summer of 1903.
Oh, we wore decorations, yeah. So we all fitted in that other way, you know.
Yes, you couldn't come in on foot,
no. You had to order a landau at a livery stable. You notified them that you were expecting an audience. So then they'd keep one of these carriages ready with two horses and a coachman and a footman. And then you went up in the lift, a water lift, you know, up to the beautiful... Loggia di Raffaella, they are.
The sisters were immensely struck by the Pope's physical presence. They tell us something we could never tell just by looking at the black and white photographs of the period. Pope Pius X had blue eyes.
I remember saying to Mother, Mother, the Holy Father has blue eyes. And they were full of light. And they looked down on you, I don't know, with such light and a twinkle in them too, you know. But such sweetness, you know. Everybody loved those eyes, you know. They were the eyes of a saint.
The McMurrah sisters were thrilled by Pope Pius X's election. Not everybody was. In France, on learning of his election, controversial Catholic writer Léon Blois wrote in his diary,
I learnt this evening of the election of the Patriarch of Venice. He has taken the name of Pius X. Instead of filling me with joy, the news makes me sad, almost disappointed. I had so wished for something different. Nothing ever changes. An Italian and an old man.
But Léon Blois was wrong. Pius X may well have been Italian and what may have seemed old at the time, 69, but something had changed. Unlike the popes of the previous century, the first pope of the newly nascent 20th century was a man of the people, the son of a postman and a seamstress. His humble origins spelt a capacity to communicate. Warmth and humanity were to prevail over the remote regality of his predecessors, surfacing at times into a reassuring playfulness. The McMurrah sisters experienced this firsthand when they engaged in a curious custom then in vogue, which consisted in buying a papal cap identical to the one the Pope wore from the same nuns who made them for him, and then, during an audience with him, proceed to exchange it with him.
And then he looked down at me just a little reproachfully, and then a twinkle came into his eye, and he took it, and he put it behind his back, you know. Oh,
and then he kind of walked away. So then I didn't know what was going to happen to the cab and all of this thing. I mean, I'd been told exactly what I was to do, so I ran after him on my knees. So then he took it off, you know, and he gave it to me rather reluctantly. And then he put the other one on his head.
Today, the idea of exchanging caps with a pope, or indeed running after a pope on one's knees, certainly strikes us as quaint, to say the least. At the beginning of the century, it obviously wasn't so unusual. What did seem unusual was the choice of a pope who had served as a parish priest.
We wanted a pope who had never engaged in politics, whose name would signify peace and concord, who had grown old in the care of souls, who would concern himself with the government of the church in detail, who would be, above all, a father and a shepherd.
A father and a shepherd, the words of Cardinal Mathieu, one of the cardinals who elected
Giuseppe Sarto,
and Pope Pius X was every bit a pastor, firmly convinced everybody had a right to see the Pope in person. He created a stir by spending his Sunday afternoons teaching catechism to ordinary people. He spent time with children, earning himself a reputation as the children's Pope, lowering communion age to children as young as 7. Holy Communion is the shortest way to heaven, he never tired of saying. The choice of a pope who would be more of a father and a shepherd and less of a politician was also shared by the Catholic rulers of that time in Europe. In 1903, they still exercised their right of veto over the choice of a Roman pontiff. It was to be for the last time. Ironically, one of the first gestures of the very man they had chosen as pope was to remove this ancient privilege from them. By this clamorous gesture, only days after his election, the Pope showed he possessed copious courage and, above all, a flair for innovation. But something was lacking. On the odd occasion, he proved to be highly suspicious of things that might break with the past. Despite having witnessed the dawn of aviation, and despite the Vatican garage being full of motor cars, he refused to go anywhere near what he referred to as a horseless carriage.
It's well known, for sure, one of the first cars ever get a Vatican plate on its body was donated at the time of Pope Pius X. But Pope Pius X never stepped on an automobile.
Unlike Pope Pius X, Marquis Mario Teodoli had a passion for motor cars, a passion he inherited from his father, who served as an honorary noble guard under Pope Pius X.
My father bought a car after he got married in 1909. And that I remember as a child, when the seasons changed, winter was coming, the car was driven down to a garage, the summer body was dissembled, and the limousine tied down to the chassis, if you see what I mean. Probably, if one could interpret a human being of his age, the automobile was a modern means of transportation. Probably wouldn't have felt very sure in it.
Apart from his fear of motor cars, Pope Pius X was otherwise fearless of change. His gentle heart hid an iron hand. He was a tireless reformer, both at pastoral and administrative levels. He launched the liturgical movement that would later be taken up by the Second Vatican Council, issued a document on sacred music that contributed to the revival of good liturgical music, creating a watchdog commission to enforce the norms expounded in it. Alleluia. Certainly, Pope Pius X never forgot his Venetian origins. He felt imprisoned in the Vatican and used to sit looking wistfully out at the trains going by, longing for the flat and familiar horizons of his homeland. He loved to break out in his Venetian dialect and did so on one occasion during a private audience.
My father, just married in 1904, wanted to introduce his wife to Pius X. Our family...
Like Marquis Teodoli, Count Cardelli also belonged to one of the patrician houses that had for generations been devoted to the Holy See.
Representatives of the ancient nobility of the city of Rome has always been, from one generation to another, attached and devoted to the Holy See. In those years, it was easier for our families to be received in a private audience. My mother was Belgian and could hardly speak Italian then. The Holy Father encouraged her with his sweet smile and said, in a few months, you shall speak Italian like me. But he used a funny word in his Venetian dialect, la spapolare l'italian come me.
Ten years after this audience, the sweet and paternal Pope Count Cardelli described so well was to die at the age of 80. While the Count doesn't remember his death, Marquis Teodoli does.
There's one item about that Pope that I remember distinctly, and I brag about it because I was 4 years old, and I was up at Siciliano, and it was the day of the feast of the protector. There was a saint protector of Siciliano, still exists, Santa Liberata. We heard the bells ring, but instead of ringing for the feast day, we heard the passing bells because Pius X died that day.
My guests on this program were the McMurra sisters, Marquis Mario Teodoli and Count Carlo Cardelli, all of whom I personally met and spoke to in the latter half of the 20th century. And now, moving on in the broadcast, let's continue, anyway, to begin with, to focus on the figure of Pope Pius X, in a way, who founded the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music and who once wrote a motu proprio, or an instruction, on sacred music. One issued only a few months into his pontificate. But do watch the change of pace and tone as we join our popular Latin lover, Carmelite, Father Reginald Foster. Pius X. 1903. Beginning of the 20th century.
That's when he was elected.
Mm-hmm. At the beginning of his pontificate, he wrote an instruction on sacred music. On the feast day of St. Cecilia, November 22nd, 1903, for respect towards your expertise in Latin, I'd like to read from a section in the liturgical text which says, "The language proper to the Roman Church is Latin. Hence it is forbidden to sing anything whatever in the vernacular in solemn liturgical functions." And he specifies much more, to sing in the vernacular or common parts of the Mass.
I didn't know that.
He also specifies what the least suitable music is for liturgical events. In his view, for accompanying functions of public worship, the least suitable is the theatrical style, which was in the greatest vogue in Italy in the 19th century, which he describes as diametrically opposite to Gregorian chant. Now, you know who I'm going to speak about now, don't you?
No.
Someone you like a lot. Venantius
Fortunatus.
Right?
We were reading him in the office this morning.
Okay, what did he say? What were you reading about?
Well, reading his hymns there, which are in the breviary all over the place.
Well,
that people don't know about. I'm surprised that he spoke that strongly. Pius X about liturgical hymns in Latin.
He specifies Pius X. He says that sacred music should possess in the highest degree the qualities proper to the liturgy, and in particular sanctity and goodness of form, which will spontaneously produce the final quality of universality.
Good.
How does one say sanctity and goodness of form in Latin?
Sanctitatem formaeque bonitatem. Oh, no, they wouldn't say bonitatem. Integritatem.
And
sanctitatem formaeque integritatem.
Which gives it a final quality of universality. That's interesting, isn't it?
Atribuit ultimam universalitatis indolem.
Then he says it must be holy. We know what that is in Latin.
Whatever that means.
Well, he specifies. And must therefore exclude all profanity, not only in itself, but in the manner in which it is presented by those who execute it.
Like people dancing with guitars at the altar.
How does one say people dancing with guitars at the
altar? No!
He didn't know. There weren't people dancing with guitars.
No, cum citeris saltantes ad aram. Cum citeris saltantes ad aram. People dancing with guitars at the altar.
It must be true art, for otherwise it will be impossible for it to exercise on the minds of those who listen to it that efficacy which the Church aims at obtaining in admitting into her liturgy the art of musical sounds. How do I say the art of musical sounds?
Bob, you want to say sonorum musicorum artem? You can do that easily. I better look into this thing. I have to look into
Pius,
this.
I can give it to you.
No, I know where I can find it. The beginning of his pontificate.
The different kinds of sacred music. It says that these qualities are to be found in the highest degree in Gregorian chant, as we said, no? Consequently, the chant proper to the Roman Church, the only chant she has inherited from the ancient fathers, which she has jealously guarded for centuries in her liturgical... Well, it says codices, but I don't know how you say that in English. Codices?
Codices. Like manuscripts.
Yeah.
Like
so
books.
How does one say the Gregorian chant, the only chant inherited from the ancient fathers, jealously guarded for centuries?
Cantus Gregorianus. A patribus hereditate acceptus. Jealously. That's a hard word to say.
Why do you think I picked it?
Custoditus. Almost avide. Avidissime custoditus. Guarded as what?
For centuries.
A tot secola. I have to look into this.
You know the other guy he likes is Pierluigi da Palestrina. Classic polyphony. How does one say that in Latin?
Polyphonia classica, what are you going to say?
Of the Roman school. The supreme model of all sacred music.
He would talk that way today. You could never get away with that today.
Okay, well...
He would just laugh you out of existence.
Venantius Fortunatus, he was a saint, and he was born about 530. He was Italian.
Well, actually, French, really, what it might mean up there in southern France, if I'm not mistaken.
In Poitiers, yeah. He received a relic of the two cross, and he has a famous hymn, no? Doesn't he have a famous hymn?
Vexilla Regis Prodeunt, or something. Or Pange Linguam, depends.
Vexilla Regis Prodeunt.
Mm-hmm.
Hymnus in honore Sancte Crucis.
Which is still used today in the liturgy for Good Friday. It's still used. Most people don't know where it comes from.
Okay, well, what verse would you like to translate for us?
Vexilla Regis Prodeunt, fulgit crucis mysterium. The flags of the king come out. The mystery of the cross is shining. Quo carne carnis conditor, suspensus est patibulo, by which mystery the creator of the flesh in the flesh was hung up on a cross. That's what's there.
Do they still sing all the verses or just some of them?
It depends. No, not all the verses. Fundis aroma cortis, you know, I haven't seen that. I would think almost down to the end is fundis aroma corti, James. The last two maybe not, but I see the rest is there.
What about...
We're still using this on Good
Hail
Friday.
Hail thee festival day, that Easter, for Easter. That's Venantius Fortunatus. No?
Yeah, what is the... Oh, heaven's sakes.
What would he have sung on Easter Saturday? Venantius Fortunatus.
Oh, what they were celebrating Easter Saturday. I don't know what they were celebrating. The baptisms and things? Perhaps not much. They were celebrating newly baptized on Saturday. I don't think he even had anything about that.
And on Easter Sunday?
Oh, that's another story. Like the different people. There's a sequence of Easter that was written by one man. And another hymn of Easter by another person. He didn't write absolutely everything.
So who wrote the hymn for Easter?
The sequence of Easter was some guy from the 9th century, Valpolo or something like that. Kind of an unknown man, but it stuck.
Anonymous. Mm. How does one say anonymous in...
Well, today they would almost say anonymous or unknown writer. Or...
How would you say that in Latin?
Ignotus autor. Or attributed to da-da-da-da, and we simply don't know where some of these things came from, you know? Whoever said in English the first time, okay, they still don't know where okay comes from, but anyway.
Well, okay then, what about...
I don't know, but everyone says it, but no one knows where it came from.
So what about a hymn for Easter then?
I don't have it here, though.
This one isn't Venantius Fortunatus.
I don't think so.
It says it is. Words, Venantius Fortunatus.
Well, translation. I don't have the Latin here. I don't have the Latin.
I just want to translate. God of all pity and power, let thy word be assured to the doubted.
Deus omnes pietatis et potentiae. I can hear the verse going. Deus omnes pietatis et potentiae. Da-da-da-da-da-da, it goes on like that.
Let thy word be assured to the doubted.
Or the doubting or something.
Anyway, you choose a hymn for Easter Sunday.
But I don't have the Latin here.
Well.
I should have brought that. I got it out of the library. I have it all set for my students. We're going to start this week giving them text from Advent and Easter already.
What do you speak about to your students when you focus on Easter?
Well, I have to be very careful because most of them have nothing to do with the church.
And so?
I would say like springtime and...
Easter bunnies.
Time. Not Easter bunnies, but resurrection time. And they kind of catch that. And then...
How do you explain resurrection in Latin?
Well, I would say the rebirth of nature and be done with it. You know?
Rebirth of nature? How do you say
I mean, the birds come back and the trees come back and the animals come back and reproduction comes back and all this other stuff. And then, isn't that resurrection enough? I'd be very careful because I can't talk too much about theology. Because they won't accept it. I mean, we're Latinists, not Catholic theologians.
What about the Alleluia? You sing that at Easter again for the first time, no?
Yeah.
So how do you say Alleluia in Latin?
Well, it's the same thing because it's Hebrew. It's Hebrew, and then went into the Greek and into Latin, unchanged. Unchanged in English and all languages, Alleluia. I know a friend at the house who was born on Easter Sunday. And he was baptized. His baptismal name is Alleluia.
In the Easter Vigil, the deacon sings the Exalted.
I've sung that 1,000 times in my life.
What does Exalted mean?
Exalted Yam Angelica.
This is the night
Turba Celorum. Oh, I've sung that enough.
This is the night when you first saved our fathers.
Yeah. Certainly, this is exalted. May the crowd of the heavenly things exalted rejoice now.
You freed the people of Israel from their slavery.
Yeah.
That's all there.
If I can think of the original text. A servitute liberasti.
And led them dry shod through the sea.
Sycopede, I remember that. With a dry foot.
Another of our great Easter chants was written about 500 years after that exultet. And we sing it at the Sunday morning mass just before the gospel. There's the sequence of Victime Pasquale Laudis.
Well, yeah, that's this man, Valopo, or something what his name is, that we found this morning by chance. Because some guy has a whole book, a brand new book. It's rather interesting, from the Vatican, you know. The hymns of the liturgy and Victime Pasquale Laudes Immolent Christiani.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's out of the music is out of this world.
There's a short chant of a dialogue with Mary Magdalene, no? Tell us, Mary, what did you see upon the way?
De nobis Maria, quid vidisti in via? Tell us, Mary, what you saw on the road.
And Mary replies? I saw the tomb of the living Christ.
No, just relax. Dic nobis Maria, quid vidis in via? Sepulchrum Christi viventis, et gloriam vidi resurgentis. I saw the tomb of Christ living, et gloriam vidi resurgentis. And I saw the glory of the one rising. Oh, it's out of this world. Sepulchrum Christi viventis, et gloriam vidi resurgentis. I saw the angelic witnesses. No, does that follow? Angelicos testes, sudarium et vestes, the sweat cloth and his clothes I saw. Sudarium et vestes, Sepulchrum Christi viventis, e gloriam vidi resurgentis. Sudarium et vestes. And angelicos testes, and I saw the angelic witnesses. Oh, there's a whole world of things here.
How'd you say Happy Easter?
Happy Easter, ma'am. Ah, felicissimum vobis Christi esto Pasqua. Vobis esto, let's change the word order, esto Christi Pasqua. Easter of Christ be very happy or fortunate for you. Felicissimum, this is all your listeners here. Felicissimum vobis esto Christi Pasqua.
And heartfelt thanks there, as always, to our popular Latin lover, Carmelite, Father Reginald Foster, who spent most of his life as papal Latinist. And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks so much for listening. And meanwhile, should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Bye for now. You've been listening to the English programme of Vatican Radio. Laudetur Jesus Christus.